having a touchscreen computer has changed my life.
In a good way?
Yes.
Oh. I never know which
That was direction. A good cold open, I think.
Yeah.
Hi, Jillian Benzavalli.
Hi, Patrick Hines.
How's it going, girl?
It's going well. I meant to tell you this. I added a new Zelle person that I was paying, and as I went to pay them, a little notification popped up that was like, beware of romance scams. Do you really know this person?
But
it actually said romance scam.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Zelle, you're doing the good work.
I know. But you know those people would be like, no, it's not. He's really on an oil rig, and he loves me, and he's super real.
His face is three times the size of his head, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but I like that about him.
But I do. It's my favorite thing.
Stop judging Zelle.
Thank you. What am I supposed to tell them about today before we get to it?
The Patreon and the YouTube channel.
All right, you take the Patreon.
Okay, we have a Patreon. We have a bunch of stuff on there. We have ad-free versions of these episodes. We also do, like, the series, right?
Yeah.
So we just did Amy Bradley. We're doing Mr. and
Boy,
Mrs. Murder.
Boy, did we ever.
We did. We did the hell out of it.
We really did the
I think
hell
we did
out
the hell out of it more than Netflix did.
We felt it so deeply.
I just hated the documentary, and there was so much in there that was like, what? I felt crazy.
You know what it made me sad about is that it made me realize that some documentaries are bad. Like, it really...
Welcome.
I know. And it really made me like, oh, we can't just trust them because they're made.
No.
I know.
Not a single statistic in that.
I told you about how it's like my first go at this planet, right?
It is.
That some people are old souls.
You're brand new.
Brand new. Brand new. I love it here, though.
Yeah, it's fun.
I was supposed to tell them about the YouTube?
Sure.
Fam, we're up to over 70,000 subscribers.
It's crazy.
I mean, it's been like 3 months.
We were just at 50.
I know.
Hi, everybody.
Our poop cruise has like 50,000 views. Y'all
really?
Are doing it. Our friend Bradley in New Orleans, he only watches now. He doesn't even listen anymore.
Really?
I know. It's so fun.
Wow.
So if you're liking the YouTube, keep doing it. If you are never going to watch us on YouTube, go subscribe anyway. I'm being serious.
Okay, sure.
Please do. Because
solid.
The more subscribers we get, the more the algorithm shows it to people, the more we grow this community, and I like that.
Okay, great.
So it's a True Crime Obsessed podcast on the Tube of Youb.
Okay, great. Youb?
I just made that
Tube
up.
Tube of Youb. I like it.
It's the Tube of Youb.
I like it.
It's the Disky. It's the
I
Tube of Youb.
I can do it. Okay. I can get into that, I think.
All right, what are we talking about today?
We are doing Manhunt. You know that series Manhunt? We did another one of these. Manhunt, the murder of Emily Longley.
Taylor's mum and dad were going to do everything they could to support their son.
I started to appreciate that Mrs. Turner was not being truthful.
We had no information. There were no obvious internal or external injuries to Emily Longley.
There didn't seem to be an obvious reason why she died.
What we needed was a cause of death. We had to prove or disprove my theory that Emily had died at the hands of her boyfriend.
Do you think this destroyed vital evidence?
That was a startling moment within the investigation.
He was exposed for what he is.
Murder was the last thing on my mind.
I
didn't for 1 second think she'd be murdered.
I wanted to say, number one, this documentary is very good.
Yes.
Number two, it opens with Emily. I'm going to sob. It opens with Emily's dad talking about the first time he ever held her.
They gave it to me to hold, and I held her in my arm, and her head was in my palm, and her feet were in the kind of crook of my elbow. Emily opened her eyes slowly, and we just sat there staring at each other. I just felt this love that I'd never felt for anything before.
Now, every parent remembers this. Now, my kid came to me through foster care, and it was a very harried moment.
Yeah.
And I remember holding her for the first time and knowing I was supposed to feel overwhelming feelings of love.
Yeah.
And all I could think of was, like, I don't know how to feed this thing.
Right. I have to keep it alive.
I was the love came soon thereafter, but the first moments of seeing her and holding her was like, right. Steve's not here. I don't know what to do.
What if she dies?
The lady who brought her left, and I was like, and Daisy knows this, and she teases me about it.
Oh, my God.
She's like, Daddy, you didn't know what to do.
Yeah. Can I tell you a sweet story?
Please.
My dad, when he held me in the hospital, the nurse came up to him and said that she could see his smile through his mask.
Now I'm going to sob.
Isn't that really sweet?
Hell.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yes. I mean, it's so interesting that babies are brought into people's lives in different ways. Like,
I
didn't know my baby was coming until like 30 minutes
before
I got there.
There was a snowstorm. My dad almost didn't make it. It was like, that story is like crazy.
Oh, my God. That is incredible. incredible.
My mom was like, I wonder, like, where is he? That was like, there was no cell phone. She was like, is it just going to be me and you here, like, before I gave birth?
Your dad also smiles with his whole body. I've only met him a handful of times, but I can feel it. Like, he came to our Broadway show, and I hadn't even met him yet. I could feel a smile from the audience.
Yeah, he's a beamer.
Yeah.
You know, he beams. But also, could that be a line that she says to everyone? Maybe. It's a great line.
She never said it before or ever again.
It's a very sweet line that, like, is the stuff that, like, stories are made, you know, like, that's something that he was going to keep with him. But I think it was real.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, it's really sweet.
Well, we're in Bournemouth on May 7th, 2011. We hear the calmest 911 call I've ever heard. And at first I'm like, is this a British thing? Because they're so posh and calm.
Yeah, so it's instead of, like, we have 911 here, they have 999 there. Yeah. They do it a little differently across the pond, let me tell you. She's like, tell me what's happened then.
Just tell me what's happened there. And they read the call. My son's friend saying that this morning I tried to wake both of them up, but the girl didn't wake up. We tried to wake her up. I don't know what it is.
Right, now, is she breathing?
No, I don't think she is.
We have dispatchers that are so bad that there are classes taught on what not to do. That fucking, that Susan Powell, remember?
Yes.
They teach that, like, what not to do.
Yes.
You know, and this is, I was like, they do it differently over there.
I mean, this lady is describing that her son's friend stayed over the night before, and they have gone into the room, and she's not breathing, and there's no sense of urgency from
Zero.
The call. The dispatcher, different story. She's definitely, like, trying to get this lady to tell her what's going on. She's, like, pulling the story out.
There's zero urgency. And the dispatcher says, like,
and is it around her neck?
And is it around her neck? Necklace. No, she's got a necklace very tight.
Very tight around her neck?
Yeah.
How tight?
Very, very tight.
Oh, look at that, a necklace.
Right, very tight necklace.
It's a tight necklace. And then now, like, the ambulance shows up while the phone call is happening, and the dispatcher is like, you need to take that necklace off of her now. Someone else can answer the door. Like, you are telling me there's a tight necklace around her neck? And she's like, now, do it now. Like, take it off now. And she goes, can you send, like, one of the useless men that lives in your home? Like, they can open a door, can't they?
And this will all make sense later, but in the moment, you're like, why doesn't this woman care?
Rip that necklace
off
of her.
Rip it off her.
Like, it's so, like, the lack of urgency. And immediately I'm like, here we go.
Here we go.
Here we go.
Travel down the road, back again. Girl, Miracle Made is back. What do you got to say about the weather?
Here's my thing. The weather is changing. It's getting to my favorite time of year. But the point is, I don't have to change my sheets to, like, my warm sheets now.
No, yeah, exactly.
So I can use my same summer sheets
in
the winter because they don't make me sweat in the summer and they don't make me sweat in the winter.
These sheets are infused with silver that prevent up to 99.7% of bacterial growth, leaving them to stay cleaner and fresh 3 times longer than other sheets. No more gross odors, bacterial growth. That's my drag name.
Right.
Hey, tell me about NASA.
Here's the thing about NASA.
Okay.
Miracle Made uses silver-infused fabrics inspired by NASA. They are thermoregulating, and they're designed to keep you at the perfect temperature all night long, no matter the weather, which is what I was just saying.
Yeah. Also, get out of here, bacteria. Miracle Made is designed for your skin. Bacteria can cling to your pores, causing breakouts and acne. Sleep clean with Miracle.
And they're super comfortable. It's like you're sleeping in a hotel, only you're not. You're in your house.
You don't have to pay to stay there, except you kind of do.
Right. And you still have to wash your own sheets.
Yeah. Upgrade your sleep as the weather heats up. Go to trymiracle.com/TCO to try Miracle Made sheets today.
And whether you're buying them for yourself or as a gift for a loved one, if you order today, you can save over 40%.
And if you use promo code TCO at checkout, you'll get a free 3-piece towel set and save an extra 20%.
Miracle is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you aren't 100% satisfied, you'll get a full refund.
Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/TCO and use code TCO to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off.
Again, that's trymiracle.com/TCO to treat yourself.
Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode. It's not as easy as you think to save free 3-piece.
I know, but guess what? You did it.
I thank you.
So Neil DeVoto is the senior investigating officer, and he tells us a little bit about Emily Longley. She was 17 years old. We'll get into how awesome she is in a second, but these are sort of like the facts of what is happening right now. She was 17 years old. She was found dead in her boyfriend's bed. Her boyfriend is named Elliot Turner. He's 19 years old. He looks at least 47.
Yeah, I mean, this boy looks like he is evil from within.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But he also looks, I'm like, he's 19.
He
is
does
part of this that he's a scammer, that he's actually 45?
We've been burned, girl. They're murderers and scammers all at once.
That photo, I was like 19.
That guy knows where the Gardner art is, if anybody does.
Oh my God, I hate him.
I know.
He looks 47.
So Neil tells us that he arrived at the home at 12 noon, and by the time he got there, all of the occupants of the house had been removed. So he's got the crime scene to himself.
And the crime scene, he says the crime scene itself was the small bedroom. He says it's not a typical murder scene.
The place was immaculate, and there was no sign of disturbance in the room. In the middle of the bedroom was a double bed, and on the double bed lay Emily Longley, dressed in denim shorts and a denim top. There was no trauma to her body.
There's no trauma to Emily's body, but there was a mark on her neck, quote, consistent with a necklace being too tight.
Yeah, and then he says, apart from that, she was presented immaculately.
However, the boyfriend, though, did have, quote, some nicks on his arm and a slight bruise on his side. And I'm like, what's his explanation for this? Because it looks like signs of a fight to me.
Because they say there was no obvious pieces of evidence. And I wrote, Elliot's, quote, obvious defensive wounds aren't obvious pieces of evidence?
Yeah, I was like, this looks like a fight.
100%.
Right?
Like, it is, when we get more into it, I'm still a little bit confused as to what they decide happened here. Because Emily does not look battered in any way.
Except for, you know, they planted the seeds about the necklace. They're like, oh, this necklace is too tight. And so now they're telling us that there's like a mark on her neck consistent with a tight necklace. And because the mom planted that seed on the phone call, I think they're saying like, oh,
so you're tying it all together for me, girl.
But
thank
you. I'm thinking, so the story is that the story that the family wants us to believe right away is that she like got her necklace tangled in her sleep, I guess.
Right.
And it got really tight around her neck. And then she just stopped breathing, but it's like, well, does it? I thought the body just naturally sort of like reacts. Like, wouldn't she have woken up the boyfriend if that was the case?
This family is making a lot of assumptions about how dumb everybody is.
Well, they're fucking idiots.
And these are people flying by the seat of their pants.
I feel
in this
very
moment.
Smart compared to these losers.
Well, you're very smart in general.
Oh, I'm not
you
at all.
You should feel
I'm
like a genius compared to these people.
No. I'm wrong about things
feel very
all the
smart
time.
Compared to these
Oh my God.
People.
No. But the boyfriend does say, like, they went out, they were drinking, they had a fight, the fight got physical.
At one stage, he had made contact with her neck.
He says he didn't mean to hurt her. I never meant to harm her. I had just defended myself. He said she was kicking and screaming, and he just pushed it on the neck to get her off.
He made contact with her neck. And I'm like, okay, well, already your story's getting more interesting, you asshole, because I thought it was a too tight necklace. And now you're admitting you made contact with her neck.
And also, I was like, do you mean to say you punched her in the neck? Like, don't say you made contact with her neck.
Because this Dave O'Grady guy, he's the lead interviewing officer. The boyfriend tells him, I pushed her by the neck to get her off of me. Like,
Drita of it all.
Seriously, Karen, get up.
Don't you, Karen, get up me in the middle of an episode.
Get up, Karen. I can't remember. I don't know what it is. Is it Get Up, Karen? Or I think it's Get Up, Karen.
Yes.
Right?
I think Karen. So.
But like, just visualize what that is for a second, dear listener at home, to push someone by the neck to get them off of you. Like, just think about that.
Because he's saying he was defending himself in this moment. She was crazy. She was hitting him. She was screaming. And he had to push her away by the neck.
By her neck?
Yeah.
But wouldn't it get someone away from you if you use both hands and push them by their shoulders?
Yeah.
Like, one hand on the neck doesn't seem like it's doing much. This story is full of
bullshit. It's almost as if this story isn't what happened.
Right, it doesn't happen. But, like, what a weird excuse. Like, with your hand. And, like, just take your two hands and push them away. Or, like, that just doesn't feel like a defensive move.
It's the kind of thing where, like, when you commit a murder because you're a crazy, insane person and then you have to figure out later how to explain away
He's
what
like
you did.
He's, backtracking.
Yeah, and, like, none of this. Like, this is why we don't murder people. You're never going to get away with it. That's not the only reason
this
why
is, like, one of the many zillions of reasons.
One of the many zillions of reasons.
But also, like, yes, this is a very clear reason in this instance.
Right,
like
you're never going to make up a story that makes sense. That almost never works.
Because then he's like, oh, we had a fight that was so bad that I'm pushing her away from me by her neck, but then we made up.
Elliot had said that Emily was okay after this, and in fact, he went and got her some water, and that they then went to bed together, and it wasn't until the morning that he discovered that she was deceased.
Emily was just laying there and she wasn't alive anymore. I don't buy it.
And neither should anybody. Exactly.
The cops are like,
Right, exactly.
Sure, Jan.
But the only thing the cops will say is that there aren't really any, like, injuries apparent on the body. And that, like, the tight necklace story makes a little bit of sense because, like you said, she's got that mark because they planted the seed.
Right, so, but they're kind of like, this doesn't really make sense, but I don't, they kind of have to use what they have right now, and yes. It's not much, I guess is the point, right?
And thank God they say Elliot being the last person to see her is taken into custody. I was like, thank fucking God.
And they're, like, it's very clear he knows more than what he's saying.
Yeah.
So they're like, get him in. But they haul him downtown or whatever they call it, across the pond.
Right. It's probably something very nice.
Probably.
They put him in his room.
Because what they end up getting charged with is very fancy sounding.
Oh, my God.
And we'll
I know.
Get to it. I don't want to spoil it.
No.
It's not a spoiler. This is horrible. I'm just saying. It was very like, again, they do things a little differently over there.
And I was just there. They are a very kind people. I gotta tell you.
I really like London a lot.
I really like London a lot, too.
Yeah, I like it.
I discovered a place called the Artist Walk. It's beautiful.
Oh.
Yeah, it's on the Thames.
Cool.
I had a very nice time there.
That's really nice.
Yeah.
I like London.
Me
too. The weather's my vibe. I love it. Totally. So.
But I just wanted to say, they describe putting him in his cell and how much he hated it. And it just made me so happy.
He was not expecting that.
No.
This is a really rich kid.
Yes.
And he's been getting, once you learn about his mother, you'll see how he was brought up.
It's been a minute since you said it like that.
He can do no wrong.
I know. Oh my God.
In her eyes. So like, he's rich.
Yes.
He is entitled. We don't diagnose people, but like a fucking psychopath.
No
question. So he's been encouraged by his mother his whole life.
Yes.
So he was not expecting to be thrown in a cell to like think about what he's done.
Literally, he's never been sent to his room.
Now
not once
sit in
his life.
The corner and think about what you did.
Exactly.
And he's like, but. Wait a second, what?
With
other criminal? Mm.
He's also the kind of kid who's been brought up to believe that he can get away with anything.
So they have this asshole in custody. The cops have 24 hours to charge him, or they have to let him go.
Which, I like this policy. Is that a thing we can do here? Can you hold him for 24 hours before you
I don't know the official policy. I know that they will lie about it.
Yeah.
Legally, like, the cops are allowed to lie to you. I think they can find ways to sort of extend that. I don't think it's, I could be totally wrong. I don't think it's a hard and fast rule like it is here.
Yeah. This seems like a good rule. I like it. You got 24 hours, figure it out, or you got to let him go.
Yeah.
You know?
That doesn't mean, like, and then it's over. You can go get him later.
You got 24 hours to prove your case.
But if you're going to bring him in, you have, like, the clock starts ticking.
Yes.
So let's talk about Emily and how awesome she was.
Dad Mark just says, this was my favorite thing. He says,
Emily was just a kind of game on little girl. I just kind of strapped myself in and went along for the ride.
It was always an adventure with Emily.
Yes.
And her sister Hannah is here too. So at 18 months old, Emily is diagnosed with a form of osteoporosis.
Like, Jesus Christ.
She also had eczema and she had asthma and she had a lot of food intolerances. So she was like always in and out of the hospital as a kid.
She cannot catch a break, this kid.
And so, but Hannah, her sister's like, she kind of like didn't care about those health issues. Like, she would do what she wanted and deal with the consequences after the fact. Like, I don't know what her food allergies were, but like.
Can I say it's like me and lactose.
Yes. I know a lot of people who are lactose intolerant who are like, I want the pizza.
I'll deal with it later. Yes. That's a 2 hours from now problem.
Is there something you can take to make it better? Like to pop something and then have the pizza?
The problem is that if you're lactose, you're probably also gluten. Like, it's all wrapped. You can either eat delicious food or you can't. And I'm pretty much a you can't, but do anyway.
But isn't there something you can take beforehand?
There's like a lactate.
Yeah.
But it's never just one thing. You know what I mean? As we get older, it doesn't get easier.
It's important to me that if people want pizza, they can have it.
I couldn't agree more.
I can't like live in a world where like someone wants pizza and their body is refusing to them have it. That feels wildly unfair.
I will just say that the Domino's gluten-free pizza is delicious.
It's cardboard.
Oh no. I
tried it once because I thought I had to go gluten-free. I don't know what was going on.
I can't live like
but
this.
But I tried it and I was like, I want Domino. But like Domino, it still has to, it's fake pizza. Like it's still got to be good. And
I know.
I took one bite and Mike was like, it's bad, huh? Then I tried because we have our Sunday bagel routine and I tried a gluten-free bagel and he's like, I could tell by your face.
I was like, never again. I know.
It's got to be another issue.
Anything but this.
I'm going to will it to be another issue. I don't even know what it was. I think I was just having a bad week.
It could be that.
I don't know what happened, but like, I want to hear from the people who found like the good hacks.
Oh, yeah.
If they want to have like the gluten-free.
Mike
that's the
Jensen
other thing.
Knows. He's got the whole thing down.
I want you to have the perfect New York bagel. I want you to have the pizza. pizza. Like, I have to think that we live in a world where if someone wants pizza,
they can have
they're
it.
They're having it.
I'm with you.
I can't do it.
No.
There's too much happening.
I agree.
I can't, like, go to bed. I can't add that to the intrusive thought of, no. like, they can't have pizza. Oh, my God. They can't have pizza?
Your poor little New York heart.
I can't do
I
it.
I know.
Have the bagel.
Yeah.
For God's sake. With the cream cheese on it.
Oh, the everything with the cream cheese.
Oh, my God.
Travel down the road back again. Girl, Kettle and Fire Bone Broth is a new sponsor. Can I tell you, Steve was super sick this last week. He drank like 4 boxes of it.
Yeah, well, look, it's rich, it's savory, it's slow simmered. It tastes as good as it is for you.
Yes, we're talking it's great for gut health and digestion, muscle recovery and energy, immune function. And like, if you're sick, this is the stuff. Steve like had already had some and was like literally craving it when he got sick.
Yeah, you just have to heat it up, you sip it. It's made with 100% grass-fed and finished beef bones or organic free-range chicken bones. No additives, no preservatives, no weird stuff.
And listen, I'm all about the protein these days. We're talking up to 19 grams of protein per serving. It keeps you full between meals and can help curb cravings.
Also, you don't just have to like drink it plain because yeah. I gave this to my dad because he just loves cooking and he loves like sort of upgrading his meals.
Oh, yeah.
So you can add it to rice, you can add it to soups, you can add it to sauces. Like you're cooking like you would cook with broth, just use Kettle and Fire Bone Broth.
It's so good to just have in your pantry and you will use it all the time.
Such an easy upgrade too.
It's so easy. So fam, for a limited time, you can get a free carton of Kettle and Fire Bone Broth by going to kettleandfire.com/TCO.
Just buy any 3 cartons in store and they'll pay you back for one. This works on any flavor at any retailer.
You can find Kettle and Fire in over 22,000 plus stores nationwide, including Costco, Walmart, Target, Publix, Whole Foods, Kroger, and Sprouts.
That's K-E-T-T-L-E and fire.com/TCO.
And like, if you're sick, just go for it.
Yeah, or you could just add it to like a recipe.
You could just go to Jillian's dad's house and cook with him.
Okay. He's a menace in the kitchen, though.
I'm staying out of his way.
Mike calls it like Tornado Till or something. There's like a nickname for it. But anyway, yes, everything he cooks is delicious.
Emily's family decides they've got to move to New Zealand. They decide that it's not the food, it's England is the problem, and they get the hell out.
Well, yeah, they move for Emily.
It was really because of Emily that we moved over here. One specialist said the best thing you can do for her probably is move out of London and go to a kind of greener, more outdoor environment.
A greener and more outdoor environment would be better for Emily. And it's a really big move. And Hannah, her sister, was kind of pissed.
Yeah, I mean, Hannah really was homesick. She missed the grandparents. She missed all their friends. I didn't realize how far New Zealand was from England. I also didn't realize that New Zealand wasn't just, like, beautiful and sunny all year round. They described the winter as, like, dark and cold. I was like, don't do that to me, New Zealand.
I'm like, say more.
I know.
Or say less. I'm on my way.
You can't go.
You had me.
But, you know, the family, the dad loves it. Everybody kind of really likes it. The dad describes Emily now. This I did not like, that at the age of like 15, Emily's sneaking out to go clubbing in Auckland.
Well, because when she was 14, I remember, like, I get it, Hannah. Like, she was a, like, 13 years old when she was like ripped away from her friends and family. Like, I understand why she was homesick. But when Emily was 14, her parents separated. And so she's really struggling with this. They're in a new place. And so she's like acting out and rebelling and like sneaking out of the house and going clubbing.
Now, we don't get a lot of information about the mom. The mom is not here for the documentary, but it does seem like she has a relationship with the daughters. But it also seems like the daughters were living primarily with their dad.
Yeah, we don't know anything about it.
I'm guessing. But all I know is that the dad basically says she was 15 and I couldn't stop her. I was like, excuse me, dad.
Right. No.
He's like, unless I were to lay down in front of the car, I'm like, well, get ready, Daisy, because if you think you're sneaking out of my house at 15 in New York City, you got another thing coming.
I'm sure there was some guilt there where it was like, he made the move.
Yeah.
And then I'm sure maybe he felt bad about the separation or
it
whatever.
It just doesn't seem safe.
I don't think it's very safe.
15 and clubbing in Auckland?
Yeah.
Did you sneak out and go clubbing?
I didn't sneak out, but we went to, like, you know, we had our fake IDs and stuff, but I never snuck out.
It's one
I never
thing,
had to.
I was going to say, like, if Daisy asked me, I don't know. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But, like, Daisy, if we say it's bedtime and you try to sneak out your window, thank God we live on the 4th floor.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's a little different in New York City apartment.
Yeah. And the doorman will rat her out.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, but what I wonder what the protocol is there. Like, how far into your personal life should a doorman be getting?
Oh, the doorman are all up in our personal life.
Really?
Our
that can't be right.
I mean, we love
Mind
them.
Your business.
It's a super small building. And
okay, great. If you like it.
Yeah.
Hooray.
It's fine.
So it's 2010. Emily wants to go to college back in England.
Well, and she kind of does this behind her dad's back. Like, they're going on a holiday trip, and she gets there before her dad. She goes to this college to do an interview. The dad shows up, and she's like, I got accepted, and I'm going.
Well, yeah, and... Well, I think it was kind of like she wanted her old life back a little bit.
Yeah.
Because she's going to be living with her grandparents, even though she's going to be really far away from her dad and her sister. She's going to be living with her grandparents. So her dad's happy about that part, at least, right?
Yes.
It was still a really hard thing for him. But Hannah, her sister, is heartbroken and
yes.
she's angry and she's resentful because she's like, wait, I want to go back and be with my friends and family, too.
Because, like, at the end of the day, girl, we came for you.
Yeah.
She's like, I can eat cheese. I can eat pizza.
Like, I can do whatever the hell I want.
Yeah,
whatever.
I don't have any of that eczema, Emily.
These allergies or whatever. So
yeah.
she was, like, pissed that Emily got to do all these things that, like, Hannah was really struggling with.
And I'm kind of like, wait, their whole family lives in England, and I'm sure there are reasons, but I'm like, well, if Emily doesn't need to be there anymore, can't everybody just go back?
Yeah.
You know what
but
I mean?
It's like, how many times can you uproot your life, I guess?
I know. And the dad, they're probably all working or whatever.
Right.
But I'm just like, oh, my Emily, they did that for you, girl.
Yeah. So it's 2010. Emily's living with her grandparents.
She got a job at Topshop, which she really enjoyed. She was doing business at Brockenhurst. She was really blossoming. She was enjoying it.
She is thriving. She is blossoming. And here comes this fucking loser to come and ruin it right on cue. Train is never late.
Never late. I know how old I am by the fact that I don't understand what Topshop is.
It's just a store.
It's just like a hat store.
It's like a... It's a clothing store.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
I thought it was like a hat store.
No.
I thought it was like the top was the hats.
No.
It isn't?
Is that what a haberdashery is?
Yes.
That's what that word is? That's a hat store? Like a specific, like a really like old timey, like custom, like
oh,
bespoke
yeah.
hat store?
There's a haberdashery down on Bleecker Street that I go to sometimes. It's so cool.
Yeah.
You'd love it.
Do they have like old hats
it's
there?
It's all old timey, like hats and like pocket squares and
oh,
shit.
That's
it's
cool.
so great.
That's cool.
At least I didn't think Topshop was a store exclusively for homosexual tops.
No.
You know what I mean?
I hear you. I see where you were going.
Yeah.
It could be. I think it's just like a store. I think it's like an H&M.
I think a no? more useful in that situation would be a bottom shop. I feel like they need more things.
Why is that?
I don't know. There's a lot of work that goes into being a bottom, apparently.
I could understand that.
Okay.
Say no more.
There's a lot of products that I feel like are used.
Yes, I would agree
There should
with
be
that.
One store where they can go and get them.
I think there is.
You're probably right.
I'd go down to like 8th Street if you're in the market for that kind of thing.
Yes.
So this loser comes along and the relationship gets very serious very quickly. They're like already going away for the weekend together. They're 17. She's 17 years old. He's
and
19.
Mark, the dad who I love, I'm totally on his side, but he's like, approves this trip.
My mother said this guy was kind of on the scene and he seemed to be quite charming, quite responsible. I kind of asked Emily about him and she wasn't too forthcoming. He was just a guy she was seeing. And then my mother asked me if I was okay if they went away for the weekend together. And so I said, fine.
And he says, yes.
Yeah.
Over my dead
but
body.
But she's going to do it anyway. That's the type of person she was. She was just going
to
do it.
Because you raised her. You told her it was okay to go clubbing at 15.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just she. I mean, we heard from her family, like, she was just going to, she was an adventurous person.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of like, well, you know where she, like, would you rather her tell you and have some details or not tell
and
you anything at all?
Those,
and then you're in the dark.
Those are the dynamics you negotiate forever as a parent. That's
yeah.
true. That's real.
I think it's sort of like they got to pick their battles here a little bit. She's going to, if a 17-year-old girl wants to be with her shitty boyfriend, she's going to do it.
Oh, your eyes are telling me that you know of what you speak.
Like, it's a bad scene, man.
I know.
It's a bad scene, but it's just, I think it's like the truth.
And it's crazy coming out of your mouth because you're such a, like, you're just a good person who wouldn't want to do anything to, like, break your parents' hearts. So if you're saying it, it must be true.
It's not personal.
Yeah.
It's business. You know what I mean? It's our shitty fucking business when we're 17 and we think that it's the biggest deal in the world.
It's not personal. It's business.
It's
you're
business,
right.
You know?
Oh,
straight
man.
Straight out of The Godfather, but it applies to this.
Yeah.
So it's April 2011. Emily went back to New Zealand for Easter and her dad is like, she came back and like...
Oh, my God, the transformation was incredible. She had left a gawky teenager and come back a young woman. She was happy. She was confident.
Emily had grown up in some ways and, you know, kind of emotionally matured.
Everyone's so happy. Everyone's getting along. And the icing on the cake is that Emily was going to dump that loser.
Yes.
And she didn't really say why. And I'm like, well, she's 17 and thriving. Say no more, Emily. I get it. You want to live your life.
Even Hannah is like, when she came back, like she was like a grown-up now, but in a cool way where like she would go out with her friends and she'd come home and we would like chat and we'd like talk. She also, we see so many pictures of her from this time. And like, she is just like stunningly beautiful. Like she's figured out like her look and like she likes clothes and she likes makeup. And like, we saw like, pictures of her when she was like a younger kid. And now she looks like a woman now.
And she's still, you know, 17 years old, but she knows enough to be like, oh, plenty of fish in the sea. This guy, I can dump his ass and I'm going to be thriving. Like, she's kind of very self-aware that, like, she's got her whole world ahead of her.
And Mark, the dad, describes that on that trip. This was just, like, such a dad moment that I was like, oh, my God. He says on that Easter trip when she was back, he was walking on the beach with his two daughters. And he remembers turning, like, getting ahead of them and turning around and looking at them and just being like, everything's perfect.
Yeah.
Everything is perfect right here.
It was great. And so, like, when Emily goes back to England, it was really bittersweet. Like, they're sad to see her go, but they're thrilled that she's doing so great.
Yeah.
You know? And so, but Emily, you know, like these sweet moments, because this is the last time they saw her. So they're you know, Hannah tells the story about Emily, like just being the coolest older sister ever and be like, oh, can you keep an eye on my favorite coat for me and like wear it and like keep it safe until I get back? It's just, it made Hannah feel like on top of the world. It was like a really sweet thing.
And the dad explains that like when she got back to London, she texted him and was like, it was great to see you. I love you. And that was their last communication.
Right.
I was saying to you before we started, like, I give Mark so much credit for doing this because telling these stories is so important.
And Hannah, too. Like, that her family is, like, here together to
I just don't think I could do it. You know, like, I just, if this happened to me, and by me, I mean, if this happened to Daisy and I lived to tell the tale, I just can't imagine it.
Yeah.
It's so, I know a lot of time has passed and I'm grateful that they're telling us her story, but it is, I just know that moment of, like, wow, you look at this thing and you're like, everything is perfect. Everything I wanted for my kids is happening now. And oh my God.
Yeah.
And like, that's the transition music in the documentary.
Yeah.
You know, because like now we're going to get the sad tale.
Right. So it's May 8th, 2011. Hannah is woken up.
And I woke up and I just remember thinking like, what is that noise? And so I came out of my room and went into the lounge and it was my mum screaming. Just this most like gut-wrenching horror scream I'd ever heard in my life.
Like the worst scream you can imagine.
And you can hear it. Like as she's describing it, you can
feel it.
Yes.
Like you can hear it. Like in your bones, you can feel it. Because the family has gotten the worst phone call in the world that Emily is no longer alive.
And Mark describes waking up to like a ton of missed calls from his mother. He calls his ex-wife, Emily's mother. Then he calls his mom to get the news, but he's getting his, like, Mark just can't get the information.
And, like, you can never believe it. It's always shocking, but it's like, she was just home a week ago.
Yes.
Like, she's 17 years old. She's healthy. Like, what happened?
Yes.
Like, they just can't believe. And again, when you just saw them, like, she was just here and everything was great. What do you mean?
And he says, Mark says, at first they just thought it was, like, a horrible tragedy. He says he actually felt bad for Elliot, the boyfriend. Like, the idea of waking up next to your girlfriend who's died overnight, like this girl that you love, you know?
Of course.
And he says, like, it could have been a heart attack. It could have been a cancer we didn't know about. Maybe she took some kind of drug the night before.
They're just, like, grasping at straws. And so we get this on-screen text that says, with no obvious cause of death, detectives search for evidence to indicate how Emily died. So let's go through the investigation a little bit.
Yeah.
The crime scene, they're collecting DNA and fibers, phones, computers, the bed linens. Like, they're just grabbing everything. They want to look into the relationship. What was it like between these two people? They're talking to witnesses. Like talking to people who knew them, also the mother,
yes,
who called the cops in the first place. So, like, and Emily's dad is saying this thing that we hear so often where it's like,
when someone dies, you're absolutely devastated, but no one else knows about it. And so I was thinking, why are all these people going about their business like nothing's happened? Do they not understand what's happened?
Who's this idiot crossing the street? Like, don't they know what happened? Like, how could someone live when I am going through this?
Because he's got to get there. He's got to fly from New Zealand to London and they're at the airport. He says they stop for gas.
Yeah.
And on the cover of the newspaper is the picture of his murdered daughter.
Oh my
and he
God.
Says he almost threw it. Like, that I cannot imagine. And like, as we know, like missing white woman syndrome, she looks like Gabby Petito. Like, she is exactly who is going to be on the cover of all of the newspapers.
Yeah.
Girl, Goodles is back. I haven't said this in a while. I'm throwing out the damn copy. I don't need it. Goodles is like the third roommate in our house.
Calling all Goodles girlies.
Yes. So fam, Goodles is good old mac and cheese, right? But with every serving of Goodles mac and cheese, you get 14 grams of protein, 7 grams of fiber with prebiotics and 21 vitamins and minerals from real plant sources.
Yeah. And the best thing is they have the boxes, right?
Yes.
Like the regular mac and cheese boxes, yep. But they also have the cups.
Yes.
Which is so easy to have during the day. If you need just like, you're like, I haven't eaten in a while. I need something quick and delicious and good for me, Goodles.
Now, look, you don't have to have an 11-year-old to have macaroni and cheese be a staple of your diet, but in my house, it certainly is a thing. Daisy loves the Goodles better than the other brands you know about. We let her eat it. We feel good letting her eat an entire box of it because it's full of protein and fiber and like, it's good for her.
It's one of those things where it's like, oh, good. We have plenty of Goodles in the pantry.
I used to literally feel guilty about the amount of macaroni and cheese we let her eat.
No.
Not anymore, girl.
Heck no.
Listen, it's a low glycemic index food, which means it provides steady energy instead of a carb crash. And on top of that, it's kosher and clean label purity award certified.
What more could you want? It's perfect.
And on top of that, it's macaroni and cheese.
I mean, hello.
You know what I mean? So fam, do what we did. Get yourself some Goodles.
We know you'll love them too.
Yeah, pick up Goodles on your next shopping trip. It's available nationwide at Target and Walmart, plus many other major grocery stores and retailers.
And don't forget the new single serve cups, my favorite.
I mean, it's a lifesaver.
Convenient and delicious.
Exactly.
Fine. So the cops learn right away that this loser, quote, had a dark side to him. And all of Emily's friends say that their relationship was toxic. Also, this is a good time to note, they were only together 4 months.
That was so shocking to me.
But this happens fast.
4 months. And she was going to break up with him.
She was going to break up with him. But this happens fast.
Yeah.
And especially when this guy was like extremely jealous. Everyone else is happy for Emily. This guy isn't. Of course he's not. He has to ruin everything. Like Emily was posting about seeing her friends and family. Remember when he's jealous and she's like home in London with all of her friends and posting, all he sees is like, she's having fun without him. She's doing great without him.
With
Instead of being
guys.
Like, wow, look at this, my girlfriend who I love having fun with her friends. Like, it's never that.
No, and I actually sat there trying to put myself in that mindset of like, looking at this girl that I, or this person that I love, watching them having fun and being so rageful instead of happy
it's
for her.
It's just all, it's insecurity,
yes.
You know?
Yes, and it's like, where does the, I mean, obviously the parents are fucking garbage and we will get to them, but what, like, how does this, how are these monsters made?
I know.
You know?
Yeah, I think there was probably something in him already that was just completely supported by his mother.
Yes.
I mean, we see it clearly because he's so honest about it in this odd way. Like, we hear this voicemail, we'll hear another one later, but we hear a voicemail, like, this loser told his friend about his jealousy, but of course is making it Emily's fault.
It's just not on me. It's just like, oh yeah, do you love me? Well, fucking show it. Show it what you do. Why fucking show it? You're being an asshole. It's just so disrespectful.
The second time I watched this, it struck me how angry he sounds in these voicemails.
Like,
they are scary.
They're terrifying. And he's leaving voicemails. Like,
right.
He's just saying it to all of these people. It's like, bro, she's 17 years old. It's been 3 months. Calm down.
And also, like, and the dad is going to say this in the end, but like, we just need to say it as much as we can. Men, when you have a man friend who's acting like this, fucking step up and say something. You got to call them out.
You got
to let the girlfriend know she's in danger. Call the fucking family. Men, your friends will be honest with you to a point of being terrifying. And when you hear your friend being terrifying, you need to warn the people in their lives.
Yeah. And this one, I could see like plausible deniability. Like he's just bitching about her. But there's one later where it's like,
no, yes,
you should have done something.
Yes.
So this boyfriend.
Witnesses described Elliot as a flash cash rich kid who modeled himself on being a gangster. He had received a warning for harassment when he was 16.
Modeled himself on being a gangster. Like, shut up. Like,
nothing is so boring to me as modeling yourself as a gangster.
I was like, grow
I know.
Up. And it made me think of, there's this great scene in Big Love that I love. Barb Jean Triplehorn, who's like the best.
Yeah.
Her sister, like, can't handle the fact that she's a polygamist now. So her sister is like a real obnoxious asshole about everything.
Wait, I'm on the sister's side.
I know, but she's
okay.
An asshole.
Okay.
The
Who
sister
plays
sucks.
The sister, do you know?
I don't know. But she's like, the actor is great.
Uh-huh.
But the character, like, she's supposed, you're not supposed to like her because she's like mean to Barb.
Okay.
But Margene.
Don't be mean to Barb.
I know, don't be mean to Barb. Barb has gone through it. Like,
really?
Oh my God, don't be mean to her.
Okay.
So, but Margene is like the youngest one and she's very immature. So Margene, like the youngest wife, calls Barb's sister to be like, we're a family and like, you have to love, like she like totally out of bounds, right? But the sister, the way she says it, she goes, grow up and never, ever call my house again. And when I like the grow up, when I said it was in Barb's sister's voice. Cause in that moment, I'm like, she ate with that.
Yes.
But we don't like the sister in general, like in whether she does horrible things to Barb, but like grow up, like grow up.
Grow up.
You look like you're 47.
I know. And they say that he's a leader among his friend group. They say like these are the kind of guys that go out to the bars like they fucking own the place. This is where the drinking age is 18.
He's 19 years old.
I know. These like young kids at bars, like as a bartender for fucking 15 years, like people like this are the entitled young men are the absolute worst.
Nobody thinks it's cool.
No.
So stop it.
The women, the girls don't like it.
No. And so we learned, we don't hear anything else about this, but at 16 years old, he received a warning for harassment, whatever that means.
Yeah.
So this boyfriend is a typical abuser, right? Like he's trying to isolate Emily. He's verbally abusing her. He's super jealous. He's bullying her.
Emily would say, I'm out with my friends. He'd then go and sit in the car park crying. So Emily would then, of course, feel sorry for him and go out there, and she'd eventually end up leaving with him. Turner exploited this. Emily wouldn't have liked to see anyone upset.
And sit outside crying to get her to come out and make her night about him.
And the dad calls it out. He's like, he was able to exploit this in my daughter because my daughter wouldn't want anybody to be sad. And I totally understand when, like, people aren't trained to realize they're being abused necessarily.
Loser.
You know what I mean?
What a loser.
I know. And when you're just like a good, kind person and like this person who's nice to you sometimes, who you love sometimes, is now in the parking lot crying, of course you want to, like, as any good, nice person would.
And he's also not going to leave you alone.
Like, no.
You have to deal with it.
Because it's stalking behavior. Like, you know what I mean? He's following you around. He's stalking you online when you're not with him. Like, I do think that we need to, and we talk to Daisy about this stuff all the time. We do talk to her about this kind of behavior.
Yeah.
And that this will not be tolerated. This is not the kind of thing that is okay.
No. And Hannah, her sister, is like, yeah, well, that, and it was also very violent. Like, he was also really aggressive. And Hannah knew this. And he was threatening Emily. And Emily documented this.
Yes.
She wrote him a letter after their first trip away together. And Emily is writing, I love you, but stop saying you're going to kill me. Stop talking about your ex-girlfriends. Stop being aggressive. And she's trying to play to his ego.
Yeah.
Saying, like, you're so much hotter when you're not aggressive. Like,
yeah.
I don't like this, but I like when you're not. Like, just trying to reason with him in this way that is, like, she's trying to be rational with an irrational person. And that is never going
to
work.
And we do have to teach our kids that when they tell you they're going to kill you, they might mean it.
Ladies and girls, we need to hold ourselves to a higher standard. We are worth it.
Well,
we're worth it.
That's only part of it. I do think that, like, it is the responsibility of parents to also teach.
Of course.
You know, like, they raise you to be a good, nice, loving person who gives people second chances, right? Like, it's not just the fault of women. It's parents have got to get involved here and, like, teach the behavior that this is dangerous.
Yeah.
This and you have to teach your sons, again, when they have friends that behave like this, you've got to call it out.
You have to call it out. Like, I just remember, though, like, being in a relationship where I would say, I remember having, you know, like they say, like, shower thoughts. I've mentioned this, where it's like, oh, I'm just never going to be happy. And that's fine. Like, that's just my journey, I guess. Like, I won't, you know, I would see, romanticize all these things that were going on in the world, or like watching TV and being like, oh, I'll never, like, I'll just never have that. Like, that's just not for me, because I was told that I, like, don't deserve that or whatever. So I get, that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm speaking as a person who would say those horrible things back to myself. Like, we are fucking worth it.
Yes.
Like, we're worth it.
And also, he might actually kill you.
Yeah. Because on April 30th, a week before Emily's murder, there's yet another voicemail where this fucking loser leaves a voicemail to a friend saying that he's going to kill Emily. And the friend did nothing.
I mean, we're going to talk about another friend later where he acts out how he wants to kill Emily. They're not kidding. And even if they are kidding, it's like when we were growing up, we were trained that, like, if your friend jokes about bringing a gun to school, you have to go tell the principal.
Right.
Whether you think they're joking or not.
Yeah.
This is the same thing. If somebody says that about their girlfriend, especially in this tone of voice, you got to tell somebody.
Back to Meet the Parents. You can't say bomb on an airplane. Bomb, bomb, bomb. Bomb, 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 bomb. Yeah.
You smell my boxers, bro?
By Norm. But this friend did nothing. I can't imagine getting a voicemail like that and then just going. Like, maybe the friend was anxious. I don't know. I'm assigning a lot to the friend right now. I have no idea. But, like, I don't know how you get a voicemail like that. I mean, it was only a week before her murder, so right. I don't know what moves were made, but it's like, it's shocking. And he was being so clear about it for so long.
I was just going to say, this is not the first time he's told a friend that he was going to kill her. It might be the only recorded version of it we have, but he's been saying it for months.
And there are other recorded versions of him saying how furious he is at her and how much he hates her.
Yes.
Like, give me a break. So they found CCTV footage from the night he left that voicemail saying that he's going to kill Emily.
Yes.
And we see it. And Emily is trying to talk to him, but the boyfriend's being like super, super dismissive. This is like right out of the abuser playbook.
Yeah.
But then, and we don't see it, thank God.
That then escalates into actually assaulting her in front of friends and in public.
And Turner comes up and grabs her head and smashes it into the table.
They don't show the footage of him attacking her, but we do see him throw the glass.
Everybody who's in this video is culpable here. If you are out with your friend and a man smashes her head, or anybody smashes her head into a table, you call the fucking cops.
I don't know, like, the bar didn't seem to do anything.
No.
Or we're not told that the venue did anything.
We see her friends, like, gathering her up and getting her out of there, which is
absolutely the
right thing to do. But you, like, these, like, he's telling you what he's going to do. And I'm not blaming the victim. I know he's the only person at fault here. But I'm just saying that, like, he's telling his friends he's going to kill her. He's showing everybody at this bar that he's going to kill her.
He's stalking her.
He's stalking her. He is physically abusing her. I don't know how the cops did not get called in that moment.
I don't know either. And, it, like, as horrifying as it is, this is very valuable to the case because it's confirming what Emily's friends and family
yes.
were telling the police.
Yes.
And so the cops say, all right, we have those voicemails. We have the letter Emily wrote saying, please stop threatening to kill me. We have the CCTV footage of the assault. We have eyewitness accounts. Like, it's, like, so clear that this is someone who was planning on hurting Emily. Like,
yes.
everything is falling into place. And so a week before she was murdered, we learned that Emily tried to break up with him. And again, as we know, this is the most dangerous time for someone in a very bad situation.
Exactly. Travel down the road back again. Girl, this message is sponsored by Greenlight. You know that we love this in our family. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. It's a safe way to teach kids and teens about money, preparing them for bigger financial decisions later.
So yeah, here's the thing. With Greenlight, parents can send money quickly. They can get spending notifications. They can assign chores.
In our house, we use the chores feature all the time. Daisy is asking to do extra chores to earn extra allowance because we sit down with her each weekend and look at the app and see how much money she has, and we discuss what she wants to do with it. This is the kind of financial planning I never had when I was a kid.
Because what Greenlight is doing, so like kids and teens are learning how to save. They're
yes.
learning how to invest, how to build money confidence. There's so many things where it's like, oh, that feels scary. That feels like I'm out of my element. But with Greenlight, you're teaching them all this stuff super young.
And it's amazing to watch them learn and grow. You can give your kids the financial education many of us didn't get, like me. Join the millions of parents already using Greenlight, the number one family finance and safety app.
Like, this can make a huge difference in their financial future, honestly.
I'm seeing in Daisy qualities when it comes to money that I never had. She saves. Like, I spent money as soon as I got it.
That's crazy.
Yesterday.
Right.
Yeah.
You should get it.
I should get it for me.
So start your risk-free Greenlight trial today at greenlight.com/TCO.
That's greenlight.com/TCO to get started.
Greenlight.com/TCO.
And you can customize that debit card.
Oh, yeah. It can have like a cute picture on it, like yep. of your dog or something.
Absolutely. Or Sweet. Me. Give me a picture of me.
So it's May 5th and Emily is out with her friends and the boyfriend hears about it. And there's like a guy there, whether it doesn't matter if it's a date or not. Like, it could have been her father and he would have gone off the deep end.
And we learned that this actually wasn't even true. She was home doing homework.
Right. But
you know?
Like, he hears about this
yeah.
somehow that like, oh, there's like some guy out. Again, it could have been her father. And
right.
It would have elicited the same reaction.
Yeah.
But the boyfriend, quote, arms himself with a hammer and heads to the bar where Emily is. And I'm like, who is telling him where she is? Like,
right?
Like, why does he think she's there? And she's not. There.
No.
But like, he just goes.
He armed himself with a hammer. His intention was to go over and assault her at the bar. CCTV shows Elliot entering a club with what appears to be a lump hammer down the front of his trousers.
They can actually see the hammer down the front of his pants.
Like, he went there specifically to hurt her.
To beat her with a hammer.
That's why he went. He's not there for any other reason. He's there to harm and potentially kill Emily.
And also, like, what is so telling about this is that he was going to beat her with a hammer, maybe kill her in a public place. He's not planning to get away with this.
But
all he wants to do is kill her.
And it shows you, like, how he's spiraling because he made up this whole scenario in his head. She's at home doing homework.
Yeah.
So he gets this, like, little bit of information and then has invented this, like, in his mind, the worst case scenario that, what, she's, like, out, and she's a 17-year-old living her life? Oh.
Right. And it's also like, okay, you're going to beat her with a hammer and then you're going to go to prison. Like, this is not about being with her.
And he's also just telling Emily's friends that he's planning on killing Emily.
According to the documentary, that night, he told Emily's friends that he did kill her. And then nobody calls the cops again.
Because he's like, oh, just kidding.
I don't get it. Like, am I wrong in thinking that her friends also failed her?
I mean, she might be begging them not to.
Yeah.
I mean, that would, you know, for a great many reasons,
yeah,
she would be begging them
not
to.
I guess that's true.
I think, you know, being 17, you just don't want to make it any worse. And I think you would assume that calling the cops would make it worse, or she just doesn't want it. Like, I mean, I can see her talking them out of it.
I just want somebody to go to a grown-up and let them know what's happening.
I
just want somebody to go to, like, an actual adult and say, like, hey, she's begging me not to call the cops, so I'm not, but you're my mom or my dad or my guardian. I'm going to tell you, and you, with more life experience, can decide what to happen.
Well, look, I think a lot of times the cops will say it's nothing until it's something.
Yeah.
Like, you know about this, and I will just say it very briefly with not a lot of details because I don't really feel like getting into it today. But I was in a situation where I told the cops, like, this really scary stuff is happening.
Yeah.
And they told me to my face that there was nothing they can do until and unless the person kills me, essentially. They were like, this is all cool. Like,
I saw you that day.
We'll start. Yeah, you saw me that day.
Yeah.
And you heard phone calls that I had about it.
Yeah.
And like, can vouch that this is the truth.
100%.
But I went because I've learned a lot doing this show. But part of it is like, well, if it happens, I need the paper trail so that, like, when Mike is trying to avenge my death or whatever.
You literally said that. You were like, well, I need to make the paper trail so that we can prove who did this.
Right. Like, or like, if and when it happened or whatever. Like, I know enough to do that.
Yeah.
Right. So.
But even you are planning for your own death in that scenario.
And they, like, told me as much. They were like, this is, like, thanks, I guess, for bringing this. There's nothing we can do about it. Like, I was like, do you want to keep the death threat or no? And they were like, no, we're good. Literally.
Yeah.
Literally.
I know. And it's like, it's only later that Neil, the detective, found the CCTV footage of him entering the bar with the hammer. It's like, okay, but he went there with a fucking deadly weapon.
Yeah.
But even that, he didn't do anything with it.
Right.
You know?
Like, I can understand, like, okay, so let's just say people called or, oh, there's a voicemail. Like, I wonder what the conversation would have been.
Yeah.
If it's like, well, but he hasn't, right?
Right.
Well, but it's like, okay, well, he came here with a hammer. I mean, it's a very different situation than mine, obviously.
But it's like, he would have been, like, I mean, if somebody had called the cops on him smashing her head into the desk or the table, like, something would have happened to him that night.
It was clear enough, and thank you for not showing it.
Yes.
Filmmaker, but it was on the CCTV footage. Like, what did the people who worked at that venue do? It was obvious enough that, like, something happened and then a bucket of people left right away. And then just nothing was done.
Really? Whatever. It's like, I don't know why this feels like we're experiencing it for the first time. We go through this all the time.
It's so frustrating.
It's so common. And it's like, how have we not figured this out yet?
Because it's so avoidable. So to see it again, it's just like, I know how this, I've seen this film before.
Right.
I do not like the ending. I know what happens. But like, it doesn't have to happen this way. Perhaps, like, I would like, maybe I'm wrong though. Like, I would love to live in a world where I can say this was preventable. But I think if someone is so insecure, like this fucking loser, like most of them are, they will find a way to do the horrible thing they want to do.
Yep, you're right. Know? Yes, yes.
And that makes it worse. So, oh my God. So,
we're not even halfway done, girl.
I know, seriously. So it's Friday, May 6th, 2011. Emily's out with her friends and we have all the CCTV footage. So at 9 o'clock, they get to the bar.
And shortly after her arrival, Elliot, who clearly has been following her, also arrives. Both are seen together. We know from text messages between Elliot and his mother that Emily had disrespected him and had poured drink over him and that he intended to harm her.
She poured a drink over him and God fucking love her. Good for you, girl.
But like, what pushed her there?
Right. I mean, months and months and months. Like, she just tried to break up with him. He basically said, no, thank you.
Right.
You know?
I will kill it. He's been actively, repeatedly threatening to kill her to her face.
And here's the hammer.
She had to write him a nice letter begging him to please stop.
Oh, my God.
And say, you're so much hotter when you don't do this. This is what this piece of shit texts his mommy. And I'm going to read this verbatim because we see the screenshot.
For context, this is the night that he kills her.
Yes. Quote, I could fucking break Emily's neck and beat the fuck out of her. I'm going nuts. The only reason I didn't flip is because my best pal was with me. This tells me everything I need to know about his fucked up relationship with his mother.
Yes.
She knows what kind of person her son is. She supports it. She encourages it. How on earth do you get to a point where you text that to your mom?
Where you're literally admitting that you're about to kill your girlfriend to your mother.
And this is her response.
Yeah.
Don't do anything that is inappropriate, Elliot. You are so young and you have so much life ahead of you. Love, Mom. I'm going to bed now. XX.
I mean,
kisses.
It's. I think he's saying to her, will you help me get away with this? You know what I mean? I'm going to do this. Will you help me get away with
this? Like, that thing I've been suppressing is about to happen.
Yeah.
My job is on the ground.
Well, and because you know, like, we never really get his backstory, but you know that he's done really horrible shit before in his life. Like, his mother has seen, you know, she knows who he is.
100%.
She knows this is coming. Emily's not his first girlfriend. She's not the first girl he's abused.
That's 16. When he was 16 years old, he got that warning for harassment or whatever.
Yeah. And the level of denial is just unbelievable. And the mother is absolutely complicit in this. If any person I knew sent me a text message like that, I would be on the phone with the, I'd be calling Emily being like, you in danger, girl, get out of there.
100%.
Like, he's telling her what he's going to do.
And he's at the point where he's like comfortable.
Yes.
Texting his mother that.
He knows that she will help him get away with it if he just can't help himself.
And I just want to slow down on, first of all, she calls it inappropriate.
Yes.
That's not what any of this is. This is like psychotic and violent.
Yeah.
You are so young. You have so much life ahead. Basically saying like, well, you don't want to kill her and go to prison. Not like we don't kill human beings.
Right. Yes.
You're violent. You need help. You should not be near her.
Yes.
I need you home now. Like, not trying to stop that or correct that behavior.
Her life has no value. Don't worry about her.
Not at all.
We just can't have you.
Because she'll never be enough for her sweet boy. Never, ever. No woman will ever be good enough for her little baby boy.
Oh my God.
This two text exchange. Yeah. I know I'm like just speculating wildly. No, I'm wrong a lot.
No, you aren't.
I'm right about this.
I'm wrong a lot is something people who are right a lot say to not like. You're not wrong a lot.
You know what? Sometimes I'm just early. I'll say that.
If
you know, you know. Sometimes I'm just a little early. I'm not alone in this.
Hey, guess who knows?
There are other people out there like me.
Guess who knows?
Who?
This guy.
This guy. Sometimes we're just early.
Yeah.
That's all. We're not wrong. I am wrong a lot. Look at this text exchange and tell me that she hasn't been supporting his vile behavior his entire life. He can do no wrong.
And it's crazy because it's like,
that's his girlfriend.
Well, and also just to see it from the mother's point of view for just a second, if he kills her, he's going to jail for the rest of his life and you're never going to see him again. If you are so obsessed with your kid and you can't live without him, how about you just save her life to save his life?
Don't do anything inappropriate.
Oh my
wild.
God.
Wild. So Emily leaves the bar. The boyfriend chases her wherever she goes. She goes to a friend's house. He shows up at the friend's house.
Yes.
Like, leave her alone.
Yeah.
So witnesses say that the boyfriend finally catches up to Emily, convinces her to leave with him. And they're seen fighting outside of the boyfriend's house.
But somehow, all I can imagine is that Emily thinks it's safer to go with him than it is to not go with
because him. Because I think it's not just safer, it's just fucking easier.
Yeah, and he's not actually gonna kill me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and we're at his house with his parents.
Exactly.
With his mommy.
Yes,
So, speaking of the fucking mother, the cops spoke to the mother. She's been lying to them from the beginning. Because according to the mother, their relationship's amazing. No issues whatsoever. She has zero concerns. Everything is perfect. This is definitely not the first time her son has texted her that Emily is ruining his fucking life or whatever.
Right, or that, like, that I'm going to kill her. I could break her fucking neck.
She's also changing her story because at first she said that she saw both Emily and her precious son in the kitchen at 5 a.m. getting some water. But later, she says she only saw her precious son at 5 a.m. getting water. She didn't see Emily.
Yes.
What we're learning is that Emily has died.
Yes.
Been killed.
This is the morning of.
So when she made that 911 call, she called the father first.
Right.
He works an hour away.
Yes.
Which meant he would have had to have traveled several miles to his home address before the phone call was then made to the emergency services, suggesting that there potentially was a delay of between 1 and 2 hours from the time that she knew that Emily was deceased.
So the cops are like, well, there was a delay of like 1 to 2 hours in between the mother discovering Emily and calling emergency services.
And the only reason...
What a piece of shit.
The only reason that would be for that would be so that they could come up with this... They need the dad to be in the house
so
they can come up with a story to explain away this death and how it wasn't the son's fault.
Exactly right. And the cops are like, all right, we have a pretty good case. We have the voicemails from the boyfriend. We have the letter that Emily wrote begging her boyfriend to stop threatening to kill her. We have all the texts. We have eyewitness accounts. We have CCTV footage of several alarming events.
Yes.
And the proven lies from the boyfriend and his parents. The one thing they don't have is a cause of death.
Right.
Because the autopsy comes back and it's inconclusive and there's not enough evidence to say she was strangled to death.
And then the pathologist goes on to say, and not only that, Though it is rare, death in young people does happen through natural causes.
I didn't think it could get any worse than everyone over 18 years old is allowed to go missing, but here we are.
I know.
Healthy 17-year-olds die in their sleep every once in a while.
It just happens sometimes, and that's probably...
I'm sure it happens, but can we be honest about this here?
Especially with the mountain of evidence that you just so eloquently detailed for us.
Like...
You know what I mean? The guy brought a fucking hammer to the bar the time just before he smashed her head into a table.
Right. So the cops were like, fuck, we have to figure out how he killed Emily.
Yes.
So they go back to the crime scene. It turns out...
The parents had been allowed to visit the scene that Sunday morning. Mr. Turner stated he wanted to recover some medicine, and they were allowed into the crime scene. And once they'd left the crime scene, the exhibit had disappeared.
They lied and said, oh, we need to get some medicine. But this was all about stealing that jacket.
Yes.
And I'm like, no one was watching them. No one was on top of them. No one was like seeing, like, show me the medicine you need.
You know why? It's England. They're like, no one's going to steal anything from the crime scene. They're too nice.
No.
No, you don't think so. I know.
Guys.
No, but that's what I'm saying. It's like, it's almost as though the cops couldn't believe that the parents would do something like that. You know what I mean?
Believe it, everyone. Let this be a lesson to all of us. Believe it.
It's the Karen Reed thing all over again. The cops just do your job. I know that, like, I know you're friends with the people in the house. You still got to go in there and separate them and get their story separately.
And, like, maybe for all we know, like, there was medicine in the pocket. So they were just using that as an excuse. And then it's like, here's my asthma or whatever it is. Like, I don't know.
How about when we secure a crime scene, we just keep it secure?
We secure it.
Or also, just a thought.
We secure
it. If you're going to let people back into the crime scene, maybe you go with them.
I just watch every
move they
make.
That's another option. Sure, you can come in and get your medicine. I will be your shadow until you leave this house again.
Right. So they were spoken to. After the fact, they denied they took the jacket. They lied again, and then they ghosted the cops. They stopped all contact with the police. So they're like, oh, my God, what was in that jacket? Like, why did they want it so badly? Like, what? We got to get to the bottom of this jacket. So Dave O'Grady's here. He's the lead interviewing officer. He's using all the good cop tactics on the killer, right? Like, trying to find things in common, like, trying to establish a rapport. They got nothing.
I don't think that would work with me either. Like, the killer, they say, is...
Well, you know he's doing a bit. You know he's doing a good cop bit. Like, oh, where's bad cop?
Yeah. Well, they're saying that, like, the killer is laughing at their questions. Like, this is the thing. This kid is not trying to get away with it. He thinks he's above being prosecuted because he's not pretending to be sad that Emily is dead.
Nope.
He's not going along in a way that you would go along if you didn't fucking do this.
Well, he's, like, smirking.
Yes.
He's being sarcastic. He has no concern for Emily or her family, like, no sympathy at all.
He's basically saying to these cops, I've been raised to believe that I can get away with murder, and now I'm going to do it.
That's exactly right.
You know?
And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
Like, that's what happened. So they don't have enough to keep him or charge him, so he's released on bail. It's 11 days since Emily's death. They need to figure out how Emily died, so they decide to bug the killer's house. Now, they don't tell us any details about how they get in and start recording. We just know that it happened.
You know, I didn't even think about that because, first of all, I was absolutely shocked that this is allowed. I was thrilled because they're like, we need to hear the conversation so that we can hear them talking about how they did this
because
and covered it up.
They know they've caught them in lies. That weird thing with the jacket. Like, this kid's an asshole. Like, we got to figure out. They're like, we just want to hear the conversations between him and his awful parents. And so C, the letter C, is here for covert operative. He's in shadow. And I'm like, let's effing go.
Here's my thing. I want to bring back the derpy music from, like, years one and two of TCO for, like, the 5-minute sequence we should have got about how they got in and they bugged, like, the ceiling fan, but the dad came home. It was a caper.
I kind of love that we don't know.
Where was the bug, I wonder. And because
we hear them clear as day.
Well, I was gonna say, we get all of the good conversation, and that's a big house. Did they bug every room?
I don't know.
Because in my brain, the bug is one of those 1980s tape recorders where you gotta press play and record at the same time.
Like in Dick Tracy.
Totally.
Above the big boys thing.
Yeah. And it's like under the cushion of, like, the chair. It's like, Patrick, you can't put that there. He's gonna feel it.
We hear everything.
So on the evening 18th of May, we heard Mr. Turner, Elliot's father, talking about the destruction of vital evidence in relation to the case.
Every second of my day's burning. But I know something that they don't know. It's burning me. Eating me up.
We destroyed vital evidence. We've perverted the course of justice. That was a confession. And I'm like,
I know.
That's what was in the jacket.
Yes.
That's what they wanted.
It is also as though it was written for a TV movie. He says exactly what they did. I shouldn't have burned that letter.
Hearing them talk about it is insane. And this is just the beginning. So, like, just to be clear, There was a confession letter that was in the jacket. The family lied, got into the crime scene, stole the jacket from the crime scene, got the letter, and then destroyed it.
But also, that means that the killer wrote a confession letter. And I'm like, wait, does he have a conscience all of a sudden?
What was the plan here?
Well, because the dad is saying it was, hearing these two fight is my favorite thing.
Fuck her.
The dad is saying it was a confession letter. The dad is having a crisis of conscience that he burned it with bleach and whatever. And he's like, it was a confession. And the mom's like, no, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. He said it was an accident. He didn't know how it happened. And then you hear the dad say he strangled her.
He fucking strangled her is what he says. Because the letter that he destroyed with bleach said that the son killed him but didn't mean to do it. And the mom's like, no, he didn't. No, 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 he didn't say that. And he goes, stop denying it. She goes, no, I am denying it because he didn't. And he goes, well, all right, what did it say then?
Right.
What did it say? And she goes, it says it's self-defense. He doesn't know what it is. And the dad says he fucking strangled her.
I mean, it's as though it was scripted for them.
And then even worse, this mother should be rotting in hell.
Yes.
The killer says, I've just flipped. I grabbed her. I fucking grabbed her as hard as I could. And I went fucking hell, grabbed her like that, pushed her like that. He's showing his parents what he's doing.
Yeah.
He says,
that girl is, by me meaning that girl has ruined my life. Yeah, she has ruined my life.
She did ruin your life.
She did ruin your life. I'm sorry. First of all, like, this mother is fucking crazy and has been supporting his murderous ass his whole life.
You created this murderer, you horrible woman.
She's seven. Emily was 17. You're 19. Nothing was ruined until your psychopathic son killed Emily. They're kids.
The idea.
What are you saying?
The mother is literally saying she ruined your life. She ruined your life by making you kill her.
Yes.
Like, you know what I mean? Yes. She ruined your life by making you
and
kill her.
And she was ruining it by making you angry enough that you had to kill her. This, because no one's ever going to be good enough for my little baby boy. So also, you saw it coming. You knew he was going to kill her. You supported it. With your actions and words, you supported his behavior and his actions. And she has blood on her hands.
Enabled it.
That's the definition of
enabling behavior.
That's the word I was looking for.
You're welcome. I get to say one smart thing today.
Oh my gosh. I'm wrong all the time.
No, you are not.
He's also Googling shit, just incriminating himself even more.
But also telling them what he's Googling. It's the weirdest thing.
He goes, I came back yesterday. I was just browsing on the computer. I typed in death by strangulation, death by suffocation, manslaughter trial, how to get off innocent. I also typed in fucking Google how to get away with serious crimes.
Now, okay, I don't understand as the parents of this kid how you're not, like, I guess the plan is to tell the son you shouldn't have killed that girl, but we're going to help you get away with it.
Right.
That's what they've decided. They've decided that no matter what, they're keeping their kid out of jail.
The dad has hated all of this from the beginning.
The dad hates these two.
Because he goes, the truth will come out, Elliot. And Elliot goes, well, what truth? The fact that I said I was going to kill her. And he's like, do you know I incriminated myself? He goes, I sent text messages that I was going to kill her. I went into a club with a weapon. That's the truth. It's going to come out. It's going to fuck me when I go to court. I'm going to be fucked.
The results that we got back from the covert product were far beyond what we expected.
Not only did it point to Elliot's responsibility for Emily's death, but it also painted a picture of the dynamics within the household.
The cops are sitting there going, oh my God. What, they're saying everything
Jimmy,
formally.
Jimmy, get up in your headphones. You got to come over and hear this.
So formally. They're laying it all out.
Now, my question is, like, we don't see this that much. The only time we've seen bugged houses is with mafia shit.
And Dick Tracy.
So what is that? Like the RICO stuff or whatever?
Yeah.
Like, we don't see this in murder cases. But if this happens all the time in the UK, you would assume that they would know that this is a thing that could happen and they would just get a hotel.
It's bizarre how they're talking about it.
Like the dad is like speaking to the lamp and telling them exactly
probably,
what
right?
you did.
Because the way, like, you almost can't believe
I know.
How clear and how specific. Like, it's crazy. I'm like, I was like, is that the other twist that the dad was in on
just
it?
Just get rid of these two,
like,
get them out
the
of my life.
Did the dad put the bug in there? Like, was he working with the cops? Because it's so weird.
It is. And I was like, do you think they are also having this conversation about getting away with murder like it's normal?
Like, her name is Emily Longley. She was a fucking person. Your son murdered her in cold blood because he's an insecure fucking loser that you raised, you stupid bitch. So, like...
It's just, you never talk about women like that. So it's just wild.
She deserves it.
I know she does. She absolutely does.
Like, you did. You knew exactly who he was and you supported it. You encouraged it.
You created it.
And it's like, you know, I just don't understand. And it's like, she's a real person. Again, her name is Emily Longley. Like, I don't understand how you can be so callous about
it. I know.
And not be horrified at your son, who's mad at you now. You might be next.
We were, no joke. But we were talking
about this. He should have fucking killed his mom, too. I hate her. I hate her.
I know. She's awful. But, like, the fact that he feels so comfortable with his parents to give the list of the Google search of, like, how do I get away with murder?
He's been running that house since before he was born.
Totally.
The minute they have a precious son,
I know.
The minute they found out it was a boy, he's been running that entire house.
I know.
So July 19th, they're all arrested. The parents are arrested for perverting the course of justice, obstruction of justice.
Yeah.
The killer is arrested for the same thing, plus the murder of Emily Longley.
Yeah. I put perverting the course of justice in pink.
Yeah.
Because it feels like it needs to be in pink. Perverting the course of justice.
That's exactly what they did.
Yeah.
Could not be clearer.
No.
So Simon, the prosecutor, is like,
this was a shocking case of domestic violence. It didn't matter that they were young and the relationship was quite short. I began to build the case with the police and start the preparations ultimately for the trial.
Didn't matter that they're young. It didn't matter that they were only dating for a few months. I'm like, thank you.
Yes.
So he's going to use everything in the trial. The text, the witness statements, the CCTV footage, the voicemails, the letter Emily wrote asking him to please stop being aggressive, please stop threatening to kill me, the covert product, a.k.a. the audio from when they bugged the house. It goes together. It's a compelling picture.
Can you imagine the day they realized the house was bugged?
Like, beautiful.
Like, I mean, wouldn't you give $1 million to have been
like
a fly
wall? Gorgeous.
It is.
It's scrumptious.
Because they're like, well, you'll never be able to prove it. It's not like you have recordings of us saying it exactly how we did it.
They must have not even believed what they were hearing.
I know. And what a great day to know that today's the day we're going to play this for that son of a bitch.
With everything, like all the voicemail, like his own voice, his text to his mother. And they're like, even on top of that, they're like, well, we need to find out exactly how he killed her. Like they need that for the jury. So this Professor Jason guy, he's a forensic physician. He basically comes in and he's like,
he does not appreciate you not knowing his last name.
I have it. Jason Payne James.
I'm just saying, I don't care.
James
I love
James.
That. That was exactly
James
what I was
James
thinking.
Reference.
But I was just like, this man, he will correct you and make
he
you call him
he feels like
doctor.
A regional theater director, like a community theater director, Jason Payne James. It's a very, he
how
wears
many,
a scarf.
How many poodles does he have?
Four.
What's his favorite drink?
A Mai Tai. No, a mudslide. Mudslides. All time a day.
And his cast parties are the best.
Well, he's the one where it's like, oh, you brought red, we're eating fish. And it's like, we can drink whatever we want.
Jason Payne James.
But no, we like him because he basically says, yes, she absolutely could have been strangled. You don't need bruises to prove that. Like,
yes.
He's the expert that they need.
You know what I was thinking? And like, this is speculating on Emily's death. And I don't mean this to be like ghoulish in any way. But my thought was that like suffocating her with a pillow wouldn't have left any marks. That's what I thought happened here.
Well, yeah, I mean, that could have been exactly what happened, and that mark on her neck was from the violent fight they had. It's April 2012, the trial finally starts, and for the first time, the family has to hear the awful details of, like, just how abusive this guy was, like, to their daughter, to their sister, to their friend.
Yeah, and, like, the dad is genuinely shocked that people knew what was going on and nobody said anything, and that is as a parent, as a friend, whatever, that would be my main takeaway, too. Sorry, he threatened to kill her how many times?
Many.
He smashed her head into a fucking table.
And he told his mommy he was gonna do it.
Like, hours before he did it.
Like, he told everyone.
Yes.
It was not a secret.
No.
So, and like, as all of this is coming out, the killer's just being a total nightmare in the courtroom. Like, he's bored. He's over it. No remorse. Like, this is a waste of time. He's annoyed by the whole thing.
And just to add to the list of people who knew, there's a friend who testifies who's like, oh, yeah, the day before he killed her,
they had gone for a walk into a wooded area near Turner's home address.
And they had discussed how he was going to do it. Whether he was going to set fire to her, or I think he was going to drown her. And they practiced this chokehold.
They had conversations about, like, all the options of how he could possibly horribly murder Emily Longley.
And the friend who had the chokehold practice on him wants the Nobel Peace Prize for being here to testify.
Like, he was almost killed during the practice murder.
Yes.
And he's scared for his life. And, like, again, I know, like, the murder happened the next day. I don't know how much time there was. But, like, when someone, like, practices murder on you.
Yes.
You got to make a move.
You got to make a move.
Those are the rules. I don't make them, but that's
it. And I wonder, maybe he called the fucking murderer's piece of shit parents and they didn't do anything about
it. I mean, that's the other thing, right?
Yeah.
Like, this guy, this asshole has parents who are going to protect him. So even if, like, you tell your mom and then my mom calls your mom and, like, you're this mom, like, nothing's going to happen.
I know. I know. I mean, like, when, yeah, I mean, you're right. When a person like this makes a decision that he's going to ruin somebody's life, he's going to do that until he's done.
And maybe you would think as a parent, I don't know, but maybe you would think like, well, to get him the help he needs, I'll tell his parents. I won't call the cops and ruin his life if he's like a, you know, a 19-year-old kid. Maybe he just needs help. You think, you hope, right, that the parents are going to do the right thing?
Yeah.
So I don't know if the parents, I'm sure the parents, but he had that warning at 16. Right. So like, this has been brewing for quite some time.
He literally told his mother he was going to kill her like hours before he did.
At one point.
And she went to bed.
Like, good night, love you.
She had to get to sleep.
Don't do anything inappropriate, she said.
Yeah.
At one point, the lawyer goes, you know, you don't seem that upset that your girlfriend is dead. The killer responds, it's been like a year.
Oh, my God.
The gasp. Everyone in the courtroom gasped. So the prosecution proves this is not self-defense, which is a ridiculous notion to begin with.
Yes.
Because it was a chokehold, which is not a defensive move.
Right.
Like, just definitively.
No.
And Emily's DNA was on the killer's shirt sleeve, her saliva, which means that his arm was around her neck.
Yes.
Give me a fucking break.
Right.
And then, of course, the audio from the killer and his parents.
Being like... I killed her, and then I Googled how to get away with murder.
Like, here's how I did it, and then he's yelling at his mom for, like, her fuck-ups and all. Like, God.
Yeah.
So, speaking of the parents, now the mother, mommy, is trying to paint her precious son as a victim. But they play the 999 call where she pretends that Emily was strangled by her necklace.
It really exposed her as somebody who knew what her son had done, but simply was prepared to go through a charade of a 999 call. Letting the authorities think that this was an unexplained death when she knew plainly it wasn't.
Like, she's ready, willing, and able to lie for her son, who is a murderer, who she totally knew what he was capable of.
And then we see a reporter chasing her down the street. I love that guy.
I hope he got her.
You know what I mean? Like, he's like, this is your opportunity to explain why you were helping your son get away with
now
murder.
Now the entire world knows what you did.
Yes.
And what you allowed to have happen.
And
I know
two
he would have killed her.
Gonna talk to you, they're going to talk about you on a podcast,
like,
over there.
Yeah, fuck you.
Yeah.
Or I hope you're listening, you dumb bitch. You fucking waste of space and life. You just, and your son. He's in the pod.
Listening to you,
not fall far.
A wild new side of you.
Like, what an asshole.
I know.
And like, I know the killer would have done this anyway, but like, you could have maybe helped him. You could have taught him to like deal with his crazy, insane insecurity in a different way. Like, you knew, he told you many times what he was going to do.
Without getting too into the details, like, we are dealing with a family who has a son who's going to be a real, I've got my eye on this kid. And I'm like, he's going to be one of the people that we cover someday. And watching the parents willfully ignore it, it is the most unconscionable thing I have ever seen. He's got all of the symptoms.
I know it must be hard to admit that this is what you're dealing with as a parent. I'm sure I don't wish it on anyone. Well, but I don't.
I don't wish it on most people.
It's a horrible life to live. I'm sure it's a completely destabilizing, devastating, horrible thing. But like, that's the gig.
That's the gig.
That you're a parent, you got to do the right thing.
Oh,
that's it.
To me,
that's
it's so black and white. And
I know it sucks.
People
but
that I know that are also dealing with this family, watching it happen, it's terrifying to watch.
You got
to
do it.
Yeah,
it sucks.
You got to do it.
I'm not taking away how much it sucks, but you got to do it.
Yeah.
So May 21st, 2012, the killer is guilty of murder. The parents are guilty of perverting the course of justice. And I'm like, thank God, because you really never know.
Yes.
Like, we've learned enough that we never know.
Yeah.
So he gets life in prison with a minimum of 16 years.
Not enough time.
No, this has been like 13 years, I think. So I'm sure he'll try to appeal, but I think he's in forever.
I hope so. I mean, I know that the sentences are lighter over there, but my God, throw away the fucking key.
I mean, he was only 19. He's more than capable of having this happen again.
And
he's a danger
like,
to society, for
he's
sure.
He's not going to be rehabilitated in there. He's going to come out and be worse.
He's going to be worse. So the killer's parents get 27 months. And like, Emily's family has to live with this forever, knowing that these parents harbored a fugitive or whatever, you know, like helped their son get away with murder. And they're just like, they do their best. They're preserving her memory. But they say like, at least they know that everyone involved was found guilty in some way, like on the record. Hannah has a very cute dog to help her through this
time. She does, and she's also got a cute little half-brother. She's got two little half-brothers. She said that her stepmother, so the dad gets remarried, they have two more kids, and Hannah says that her two younger brothers are like the twins of her and Emily.
Yeah.
Which I just thought was so amazing. And like, the wonder on Hannah's face when she's explaining that, like, she can't believe how much they're just like the two of them. It's kind of really beautiful.
Yeah. And it ends with like all these warnings.
We know that it's incredibly difficult for anybody to report this. We understand that, but the message always is that there is support and to encourage the reporting of domestic violence and to know that you have the support of the authorities and ultimately you have the support of a prosecution.
like, that's great. But also, yeah. like, when you almost die during a practice murder, can you please tell someone? Because that can also save a life.
And truly, Hello? Like, okay, just to run down the things. When you almost die in a practice murder, please tell somebody. When you're a parent, you got to raise your boys to not fucking be like this, but to also recognize when their male friends are dangerous and need to be reported on.
Yeah.
And then, like, thirdly, can we all take care of each other, please?
Yeah, can we all get a fucking grip?
Yeah, thank you. Like, well said.
Just do the thing. I know it's hard sometimes. I know, I get it. We're all tired, but just do it. Like, maybe you can save a life. Wouldn't that be something? Wouldn't that be a nice thing to do?
That'd be a great thing.
Please.
Oh my God, girl, we did Manhunt.
Manhunt, the murder of Emily Longley.
Oh my God, we're supposed to tell them about the Patreon.
Patreon and YouTube.
Yeah, Patreon is awesome. We just did Amy Bradley. We're doing, oh my God, the one that we just did, Mr. and Mrs. Murder, that we're about to do.
Yeah.
That case is really, really wild. That documentary, just like you said, is so, so, so well done.
It's really crazy. Twists and turns if you don't know the case. Twists
True.
And turns.
And I did know the case and I didn't see the twists and turns
twists
coming.
Twists and turns and a whole lot of patience. We'll get into it.
But some great women.
We'll get into it.
Yeah. And the YouTube, go subscribe. 70,000 followers and counting. It is so exciting to see us being reborn on YouTube.
Was there just an earthquake? Did
no,
you
that was
that?
Me. That oh. was me.
We get earthquakes now sometimes. In
I missed it. I was outside when that earthquake happened and I didn't even feel it.
I thought we had another earthquake. Okay, anyway.
Maybe we
yes,
did.
Where were we? YouTube? Yes, go find yeah. us and if you're into that kind of thing.
True Crime Obsessed Podcast. We are super fun to watch. What are we doing next, girl?
Oh my God. Ruby Red-Handed stealing America's most famous pair of shoes. It's about the Judy Garland slippers.
It's going to be pretty gay.
It's very gay. I had a lot of issues with the documentary.
You did?
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about Judy Garland and The Wizard of Oz. Like, I'm happy to have some light fare.
Oh, my God.
But yeah, we'll get into it. Ruby Red-Handed. It's on Hulu.
My friend Nicholas is Liza Minnelli's godson. So
Jesus
I get,
Christ.
I know. I get lots of Liza what? Minnelli impressions a lot. It's
what?
It's really great. Yeah.
What's that like?
Wild. It's wild. And I get great stories.
Are they in touch a lot?
Yes.
Like now?
Uh-huh.
Like today?
Yeah, well, maybe not today, but yes, they are in touch all the time.
Does he see her a lot?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's her godson.
That's crazy.
It's really wild. So maybe I'll ask for a Judy or Eliza story.
Okay.
And I'll share it with you next week.
Okay, great.
All right, fam. Stay tuned for the trailer for that. We love you.
Okay, we love you.
All right, bye.
Bye. And tell on someone if they have to. Don't, like, be a rat, but, like, if you can save a life, you should do it.
And be a good parent if
you're,
you
like,
could.
A practice
also,
murder.
Thank you so much.
Practice murder? Like, what?
It's, don't even.
Just
I know.
Tell.
Okay, bye. Are we done now?
Yes.
Okay, bye.
The Ruby slippers are definitely the most famous shoes in the world.
That is the Rolls Royce.
You say you have the Ruby slippers, and everybody you meet is going to want to see the damn shoes.
When the shoes were stolen.
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 I couldn't believe it.
One of the biggest heists of all time.
What would the shoes be worth today?
A lot.
The Judy Garland Museum in Grand Rapids suffered a major loss.
The people that broke in knew exactly what they wanted because it was the only thing stolen.
One sequin was found at the scene. There were no fingerprints. It was kind of the perfect crime.
Why?
Judy Garland put the red ruby slippers on the map a long time ago.
France has the Mona Lisa. We have Judy Garland and the Wizard of Oz.
We like solving crimes, and this one is exciting.
The investigation was not done well.
We've got some egg on our face at the department.
I had one little girl call and say, I know where the shoes are. They're under my house.
Why did they take them?
I think it's connected to something way bigger.
This whole story keeps getting weirder and weirder.
A reward has just been offered for $1 million.
The real gem behind all of this is the story of where they've been.
We work together with the FBI.
Heaven only knows how many feet went into that pair of shoes.
It's kind of like in the movies, how it all comes down.
It did feel like everybody was a suspect.
There is more to this than anybody realizes.
Who knows where this is going to lead?
It's gonna get real.
Only stupid, vindictive people.
I'd love to spit them in the eye.